You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today, our show is the impact of emotions on health and well-being. As we started to get into this show, we realized it's a very in-depth show today. So we're going to break it into two sets of three emotions. We're only going to focus on the top six have come from Paul Ekman's research. Emotions can change your body chemistry. A short-lived emotion, like I'm happy for a second, I'm sad for a little while, I'm angry for a little while, I'm fearful for a little while, these things are important in our survival. They're natural. But when they are prolonged, the chemicals, the body functions that occur can be quite dangerous. Mm-hmm. We can have negative impacts to our own health. So the idea is to recognize the emotion, recognize the source of the emotion, and also see, is the emotion really the emotion that you think it is, or is it something else? Is it something different? You know, am I angry at my spouse? And is Lisette the root cause? The root cause.
The problem
the beer,
with the speak is my accent, you know.
Trying to make you feel at home,
okay,
baby.
There you
my
go.
Goal is to make Lisette feel at home.
Okay, I have to talk like that.
Okay.
That's its own weird emotion.
What's the emotion? Laughter, by the way, laughter and happiness is a very good emotion to experience. We're going to talk about that. I think it's actually the first one we talk about. Mm. We're going to be talking about the physical characteristics of the emotion, the physical manifestations of the emotion, the impact of the emotion on our health and well-being, social and emotional effects of the emotion, and then just a little conclusion on each. This is not only recognizing your own emotion, but maybe you'll get to recognize someone else's as well and realize that the emotion that they're wearing on their face may not be the actual emotion that they're dealing with every day. The concept of universal emotions is based upon the idea that certain emotions and expressions are the same no matter where in the world they are, no matter who's experiencing them. There's a universal expression of emotions. And as we talked about before, Dr. Paul Ekman was very much a key investigator in this phenomena. The six that we're going to talk about are happiness, sadness, fear, disgust, anger, and surprise. Again, happiness, sadness, fear, disgust, anger, and surprise. A lot of these emotions are short-lived. They are quick responses to something that happens, and it puts us physically in a state that is supposed to help us in a situation. Some of them, and I guess those are the ones we consider negative emotions, right? The negative ones are survival emotions, like fear and anger. It's like it causes something to happen in us that makes us want to do a quick response. Where other emotions, maybe the happiness emotion, isn't something that is just like, oh, I'm happy for a second. It's like, I can be happy all day. It's a state of mind. We had this conversation. I think sometimes happiness is just when there aren't the negative emotions. Like if you relate happiness to contentment, you know, just having things going smoothly. And I'm happy about that, that when things are not impacting, it's like a pond that's smooth and there's no wind blowing ripples and somebody didn't throw a big rock in, that it's just an undisturbed, for me, happiness, happiness is an undisturbed pond mm-hmm. of emotions.
No, that's just peaceful.
Peaceful.
Yeah, you are in peace. Mm-hmm. Different the happiness. I see there's some guy explain about also that you talk about the body. So you right. say the difference between peace and happy, your body reaction different. So your breathe, also some kind of the skin, temperature, blood pressure, etc.
That's true. Happiness is, and we'll see in a few minutes here, it's associated with some really positive things. So let's get back onto our presentation. Here are the facial expressions generically across the board. You may have seen this woman before because we've used her photo available in common, what is it called? Common, common copyright. So we are utilizing things that are available to be used. Happiness, of course, the smile there. Sadness, if you can recognize that. Fear. Oh, we'll get into these in detail. Disgust, anger, and surprise. The six emotions we will be speaking about and talking about over the next... It's going to be two episodes, by the way. So the first three we will talk about in today's episode are happiness, sadness, and fear.
Okay.
Because we're happy to present it. We're sad we can't present all of them. And we're fearful that if we tried to put them all in one show, it would be too much, too quickly.
Yeah, but also it's important to say that you are in sadness. It's, you don't have to control. You just feel that. Be sad, short term, and leave it. Because you can't control or avoid some feeling. It's emotion.
So... I think, and maybe we've presented it this way before, that if these emotions are universal, mm-hmm. they are things that have been developed over years and years, millions of years of evolution. Mm-hmm. They're there for a reason. They're there for survival of the species,
yeah.
not for ending the species. So these emotions that are universal... That even other animals have some of these same emotions, like when
something logical is disgusting. So the person say, if you found some raw meat
yeah.
or some raw fruit and you smell like the animal instinct, you yeah. do like that and you're not eating. So that is protect yourself, like that you not do something wrong. So it's emotional for survival.
And someone else will see that, right? They'll mm-hmm. see that and go, "Ooh, there's something wrong with that."
And no.
Rather than, "Oh, I'm so happy and I'm not going to eat it." And they're like, "Oh, you're offering it to me. Thank you. Oh, this is terrible." You know, and someone else gets
you
angry.
You start to kill some species in the natural.
This person never tells us the truth because they don't know what disgust emotion is. They're gone. They're out of the tribe.
Exactly.
We're getting rid of them. But again, that these emotions are there for a reason. So even sadness, we're sad, but it's there for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's maybe part of it's there so we recognize that we miss. Like a lot of times, sadness is because of loss.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the benefit is that when we recognize that we actually have loss, we then care a lot more and we understand a lot more. We worry about people, we want to take care of them, because we don't want to have the sadness.
And also you make a more reflection. I have a friend, he say that when he's sad, he wrote pretty good poem and any kind of history. When he's sad, when he's happy, he cannot write anything. And many music, lyric, you know, is coming from this. And you have inspiration sometimes with one of these feelings.
So let's start off and kick it off with happiness. Very apparent on somebody's face, happiness. But there's a little comment here called more than a feeling. Happiness is more than a feeling. That it's not just how you feel, but it's how overall your body responds to being mm-hmm. happy. Happiness and laughter and things like that. Let me try to move on to our next slide here because we do talk about it. Here we go. So happiness is more than a fleeting feeling. It's not just something that comes and goes. So unlike something that might be anger and fear, which is happens and goes and it passes quickly, happiness can be more long-term. It has a profound effect on health and well-being. Part of well-being is being happy. So we'll talk about that. Recognize the importance of happiness in our lives and try to get more of it. And finally, it is a necessary and essential part of a balanced and healthy lifestyle. It's hard to be happy when you're not eating healthily, your health is poor, and you're not taking care of yourself.
You feel sick, you have a stomach problem, you're not happy. No.
No, it's so it's twofold here. One is it helps you have a healthy lifestyle by being happy, but it's also a result of a healthy lifestyle. So it plays a really important role. And the more happiness you can get into your life, part of that is making other people happy. So part of being happy, mm-hmm. I mean, giving somebody a gift, if anyone want to give us gifts, it will make you really happy. You'll be healthier for a long time.
The experiment, there's some video you see the people go to the bus and they start to smile at the people, and the people smile. So it's like they try to contaminate with happiness.
When somebody is truly happy, there's something called a genuine smile. It involves a contraction of two major facial muscles, the zygomaticus major, which pulls up the corners of the mouth, and the orbicularis oculi, which causes the eyes to crinkle. It's a universal sign of joy and contentment. Okay, let's actually talk about what that means. So I don't care what those muscles are called. I can't even pronounce them, so does it matter? So one is the smile here, and the other is the smile in the eyes. And you can, if you ever see people who take pictures and they're like this,
you know, and the eyes is like that, but the smile is fake.
It's like the fake smile. It's like, you know, the disingenuous.
Yeah, it has to be here.
I have to be here. Another photo. Another. The disingenuous smile. Maybe we should be talking about when people fake these things. When you see a short-term expression, it's just like, that's different than when the eyes go. When the eyes go, and you can feel it yourself. If you just try to do this with your mouth, and you only do your mouth, right? And you leave your eyes alone, it almost is like you're making fun of someone. It's this weird feeling. But when your eyes are sparkling and smiling with your mouth, your whole, it does change how you feel.
Yeah, no, so the technique that you start to laugh in a fake way, and maybe you finish laughing true, so I do.
That's
yourself to laughing.
That's my secret to taking a photo and really smiling, is try to get a chuckle when you're doing it, because it lifts your eyes and your mouth together, rather than you just try to smile with your mouth. And to just smile with your eyes, just do a little bit of laugh. But when you do that, you feel good.
Mm-hmm.
So you can trigger the good feelings by using the physical feelings first. You know, what comes first?
It's like the cycle,
We can talk about laughter. It happens during happiness. It releases endorphins, feel-good chemicals. That's why, what is this? Comedies, things that are funny, really have us feeling good. They actually release endorphins in our body, which makes us feel good. They influence our posture and body language. That happiness and laughter is very easily seen on the body of the person who is happy. Happy individuals tend to be open. You know, they have, that's funny. Mm-hmm. Rather than, you know, sad individuals close off. And a lightness in movement and energetic, right? That's happy. Happy is being happy. Mm-hmm. It's like you're bubbly. You've heard that bubbly personality, happy personality. Going back to the expression in the faces, we're looking at, again, this is an indication of genuine happiness, where the eyes wrinkle, that you get these crow's feet, those little lines by the side of your eyes. Your cheeks are pushed up, and the mouth is crinkled upwards. There's movement in the muscle that orbits the eye. So it is not just the mouth, but it is the eyes, as we spoke about. Impact on health and well-being. We're going to get through this and then we're going to take a break, but let's go into the impact on health and well-being. It is a significantly positive impact on health and well-being. It helps build a stronger immune system, lowers blood pressure, and reduces the risk of heart disease. Did you know that it can reduce stress levels, And chronic stress is known to be a risk factor in many physical ailments. The endorphins that are released, like in laughter, and I'm going to get off that screen there, elevate the mood. And not only that, they act as helpful painkillers. That the endorphins help in killing pain. And so it is said that those people who are happy may have a higher level of pain threshold because they're happy. And those, and I think part of it is that when you're happy, you might not notice your pain, but when you aren't happy, you're like focusing on pain. And it may be also where your attention is being directed. Mm-hmm. And there's a few more things on this. Contributes to a positive outlook on life. Happiness makes you feel good about life, right? People who are optimistic are typically acting happier. And it is crucial for mental health and well-being. What else we have? Better coping strategies. When you're happy, you're looking for solutions and good outcomes. When you're not happy, you may be thinking nothing's going to go right. If you're not happy, you're thinking it's going to go bad again. You're a pessimist. And so you don't look for a solution because you don't think there is one. Where happy people may be more prone to that. Resilience of happy people. That lower rate of mental health disorders in happy people, or they're just, what is that like? They're insanely happy.
So you leave
they don't have mental illnesses. They already have them. You know. But if that's a mental illness, that's what I want. Happiness, right?
Yes. Terrible.
Reduce anxiety. It's linked to longevity. Happy people live longer. We were going to research about comedians like Betty White and Don Rickles and Bob Hope, who all lived until their late. Don Rickles is still running around, but they're funny, happy people. At least that's what the perception is.
Yeah.
And they live long lives, and it promotes the importance of cultivating. Oh, we should promote the joyful living because joyful living is long living. And with that, we have one last thing, social and cognitive impact. So what do you think? Happy people have more social friends, they interact more socially?
Of course.
Of course they do. So they have more healthy relationships with others. People want to hang out with them, and they want to be with them, and they want to be happy with them.
Yeah, yeah. I have a friend, they always is this joking stuff. So we say, we have a party, we have to invite this guy because he's a pretty good entertainment. So
also happy people tend to be more empathetic. Mm-hmm. They listen. They are more compassionate. It tends to make them desirable companions. Mm-hmm. And good community members. And finally, cognitively, in the mind, happiness can be associated with enhanced creativity and problem-solving abilities, like we just talked about before, is that I believe that happy people who tend to be more positive people think there has to be a solution. Now, it can be that it's which comes first, that if you are good at problem-solving and you can figure things out and solve them, you're happy. Or because you're happy, you can solve things. It's circular. And maybe it's both. Maybe the better you get at being happy, you get better at problem solving, which makes you happier, which makes you better at problem solving, and it's a continuous cycle. Mm-hmm. Don't know. Don't know the answer to that. But does it matter? When we come back on 90 Day Soulmate, we're going to talk more about emotions and the impact on your health and well-being.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Day Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Today we're talking about emotions and their impact on health and well-being. Recognizing emotions through actual facial expression as well as how your body feels. So it's not just how your facial expression looks, but, determining whether it's yourself or someone else, are they really happy? Are they really sad? And how then you should interact with them to maybe help them, help yourself, and have better social connections. That's that. Actually, no matter what the emotional state is, a lot of them can help people connect. So people who are happy together, people who are sad together, people who are in fear together, tend to bond. And the bonds may help them socially. It may not help them longevity-wise with health, meaning maybe happy people live longer, but people who are in fear together figure out a way, okay, we're both scared together, let's join forces, and it's a survival technique, right?
Yeah, but I don't want to classify happy people or sad people because it's emotion, it's temporary, so you cannot define somebody by the emotion.
It's supposed to be temporary. Okay. That is the big thing. Emotions are supposed to be temporary, except for happiness, it should be forever.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think so. The final thing we wanted to say in happiness as we came back to it was a joyful state of mind allows for more flexible and expansive thinking, fostering innovation and effective decision making. So happiness has so many benefits, being happy, trying to find happiness. You have to get through all those emotions because all those other emotions are also useful and part of us. And they're part of us because they helped with our survival. So they're there for us to use and utilize to get past and through things and not to avoid them. Because avoiding is another problem. That's what I think. Let's go on to conclusion. Let's move on to next one. Sadness. So sadness, you see it in somebody's face. They're just their mouth is turned down a little bit. Their eyes are it looks like they're about to cry. It's not only their facial expression, but there's body language that comes across in sadness. You know, it might be turned down shoulders, slumped over a little bit, tears, of course, but just. The lack of pep and energy, you know, instead of excitement. It's hard to be like this when you're sad. You wouldn't hear the squeak in my chair if I was sad. You hear the squeak in my chair?
Yeah, I love it.
The physical characteristics, let's talk about them really quickly, that sadness is usually perceived as a negative emotion. Due to pain and loss, and it is negative from a standpoint. It people don't want to be sad, but sadness can be useful. It's crucial to understand its physical characteristics and the impacts on health and well-being. It is very important in the spectrum of emotional health of human beings. The physical and the manifestations of the physical, of sadness, is very important to understand.
Yeah, so the person that I listen about how your body, you can identify that you are sad. And also I have my own experience. I remember when my dad died, is that in your chest, you feel pain. And my mama say the same, so it's amazing. This feeling have like the 2-3 days you feel pain in your chest. So the body reaction when you lose somebody, and maybe then you identify when release, you understand and move forward to this episode. But this is part of the process. You cannot control, not deny, just understand.
And that's the part, is the deny. You don't want to deny, because when you deny, it's still there gnawing at you.
Yeah.
And you don't get through it, you don't address it. And at some point, that if you're in extreme sadness, there's a point to know that, okay, I need to get some help with this. Mm-hmm. I need to understand.
When it's long.
When it's long and it's not, it goes beyond what would be normal, which is really hard to tell. It would be different for each person.
Yeah, everybody's reaction right. Different. Yeah.
So let's talk about the facial features of physical manifestations. The downturned corners of the mouth, the furrowed brows, drooping eyelids, tears are common physical response to intense feelings of sadness, serving as a visual indicator of emotional pain or grief. Actually hearing someone cry would also be, right? So you would actually see and hear something. Energy levels dropping, slower movements, slumped posture, as we talked about, slowing down physically, which mirrors the internal the internal, whatever, the internal feeling of the person. So how they are feeling internally, their cognitive function also slows down because of the sadness. There's such a loading on the system, on the body system, on the mind system, it's almost like, you know, like,
well, depressing. You have to drain also for
it. So. You have to get it out of you. But it's very important to have it, the sadness. Voice changes, vocal changes are also notable in sadness. Softer, lower pitch, less energetic, reflected the subdued emotional state of sadness. Which sometimes sounds like contemplation. I don't want to compare it to that pool that or the pond I talked about being flat. Because that's different. That's calm. But sadness has, I guess, you can have, like, if you're overwhelmingly sad, you can almost be numb. And when you get numb, things can slow down. And what that does, though, is your chemistry may slow down and may affect your digestion. It may affect other things. I think we're going to talk about that, too. That the other thing is the physical manifestations of sadness are signaling methods, or a method of signaling that you're sad to someone else so they can say, hey, what's going on? And you being able to recognize that in somebody else, it's a way to connect with somebody who's hurt or needing help. So there is positive pieces to it. Sadness facially, talked about drooping eyelids where they're a little bit lower than normal. The focus in the eyes, you kind of like the eyes become dull, you know, dull. They're not bright. They're not active. They become just kind of like not there. People who seem like not to be their usual self, not their attentive self. And then the pulling down of the mouth at the corners, not the smiling up, but the going down. It's the opposite direction. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly that. What else do we have on sadness? So what do you think the impact of sadnesses on health and well-being?
I guess the one is maybe your immune system coming down, so it's easy to have some virus stuff because...
We talked about, I think last week, the chemistry of your microbes and the bacteria in your stomach are very much quickly impacted upon your own body chemistry.
I guess so, when you are fear.
Fear, anxious, and acid, yeah. But even sadness, if your body is slowing down, maybe it's not as actively being able to fight. And let's see what our presentation
don't like
is to say.
Eat too,
oh, I don't want to eat. Yeah. I don't want to eat. I don't want to eat well. I'm sad, so I don't even want... That's another, right? I'm sad. I don't feel like going to the store and getting vegetables.
And then go the cycle again because you don't have a good food, so your body is coming down, so...
I'm sad because I'm gaining a little bit weight. I get sad, and then I go to the store and buy ice cream because I want to eat because I'm sad. Okay. And then but it is the cycle. So we have to look at how to get out of that cycle. So look at that. Increased risk. We'll put these on screen. I'm going to start at the bottom. Increased risk of obesity, heart disease, and diabetes for prolonged sadness. So we're looking at prolonged sadness or periods of grief can lead to a large range of physical health issues. Weakened immune system. Oh, look at what you said. Making individuals more susceptible to infections and illnesses, a lot of them that come through the gut. Chronic sadness is often linked to disruptions in sleep patterns, either insomnia or hypersomnia, which is almost no sleep or too much sleep, which also then... That cycle, I don't get enough sleep, so I don't feel good during the day. I'm more sad, I don't get enough sleep, and it goes back and forth and back and forth and back and forth.
It's a cycle in different direction.
It does. Depression and anxiety, and we talk about the impact of depression and anxiety on the immune system as well because it creates chemicals as you actually send chemicals into your body. It's critical to distinguish between normal sadness and clinical depression because, one, you do require, necessitate going to seek help, professional intervention. Negative impact on cognitive functions. We were just talking about that. When you're so sad, your cognitive functions aren't able to act as they normally would be. People are happier, do better on tests. Did you know that? difficulties in concentration, decision making, and what else? And memory. I forgot. So your memory can be impacted by depression. And I think it's you're fighting for brain space sometimes when you're sad. Because you're sad, you're thinking about the thing that's making you sad, you're really focused on it. It's hard to let in the other thoughts that you need to be focused on.
Your brain is not completely functional.
The other is it can affect various aspects of life, including work performance and social interactions. Socially, sadness can have both negative and positive effects, and we talked about both of these in a minute, or not in a minute, a little while ago, that you can withdraw from social interactions and decreased interest in enjoyable activities. So activities which you once found enjoyable, you might not want to even take part in just because you're sad. That expressing sadness, however, can strengthen social bonds. It often elicits a sense of support from others who may want to help you out. So, and it may, if someone else is sad and you're sad, you may commiserate, right? So you might find somebody who's like you. You can have deeper connections when you're sad. Someone can recognize it and connect. So this is, I think, the positive aspects of sadness. Normal sadness is that you're sad about something. Someone says, a friend of yours says, hey, what's going on? And then you talk about something and you get deeper connection with them. And so it helps your sadness, and then you've actually built your relationship with your friend. So it what else?
That is a good point. I see some people is so much positive people, so always is optimistic. Mm-hmm. And maybe in some situation they're really sad because somebody died, for example. You cannot come if we say, oh, everybody die in some moment, so why you have to feel sad? So you don't have the connection because you really don't have the feeling. So when the people really have the experience to be sad and recognize, have more intelligent emotion to connect with somebody and not dumping with some positive stuff in this situation. So sometimes be extreme happy and be extreme positive is you have to see the context and when you want to connect with somebody, because you cannot make a joke in the middle of the sadness situation. So,
and the other is some people have a difficult time sometimes dealing with other people's emotions. Mm-hmm. You know, if a child is sad and you just don't know how to deal with it, or a friend of yours is sad and you don't want to bring up the subject because you think you're going to make them sadder. You know, I remember that as a kid, is that if a friend of mine's sad because I know they just lost a cousin or something like that, you didn't want to just bring it up because you didn't want them to go through that bad thing again. But at the same time, maybe by bringing it up, you'd be helping them and connecting closer and deeper with them. The sadness helps people process the loss, right? Mm-hmm. So you're talking about processing, that you go through it, and it's a natural thing to get through the loss.
Yeah,
it's almost like a cleansing, too.
It's like the also broken heart. So, you know, I talk with my son, and I say, when you have broken heart, you cannot avoid this. You have to, I call, celebrate your broken heart. It's one night you have a friend, a drink, and you cry because you have your love broken with you, you broke it with her or with him. But you have to process. You cannot avoid it because you holding this feeling. Try to not thinking about that, and maybe you reaction different in different situations.
Well, do you remember the movie we saw, like, I don't know, it was a couple of months ago, it was called The Divorce Party. Mm-hmm. This guy was going through a divorce, and he was really sad, and I think one of his friends decides, why don't you have a party? Mm-hmm. Instead of that, I think they were going to, I don't even remember the reason behind it, but it was the divorce party, and it was just look at it a different way. You know, you're going through the divorce anyway. That sadness is already there, but if you make it into a party and connect with people, maybe it will be different. Now, that it's a movie, so you know the premise may be really crazy, but is that a way to get over a sadness? You know, have the sadness, but then say, okay, at this time, this date, we're going to have a party to celebrate, not celebrate the divorce because that might be a sad thing, but celebrate life with your friends. You know, like move on to the next stage. Maybe. Doesn't mean we're right. We just have options. We're offering options. What else do we have here? Let's go on with the next thing. Conclusion of that. That the physical characteristics of sadness, including the expressive facial features, tears, and changes in energy levels and voice, are not just indicators of emotional pain, but also factors that significantly impact our health and well-being. We talked about how sadness can lead to various physical and mental health challenges, that it also plays a crucial role in human emotional experience, fostering empathy, resilience, and deeper social connections. Acknowledging and understanding sadness, therefore, is not about dwelling on the negative, but about embracing the full spectrum of human emotions as a vital component of a balanced and healthy life, connecting with others. When we come back on 90 Day Soulmate, we're going to hit our third and final topic of the day on emotions and the impact on your well-being.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Welcome back to 90 Days Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Well, we were talking during the break, the long break. We were talking about different things. And what do you say? You made a good comment.
I say the important part when you be sad is share with somebody. So not be sad alone. So be sometimes it's on ego that you protect yourself. I have a friend that she is avoid the friend because she's sad because she wanna use or show always she's happy. So we characteristic with her is I'm happy. But when she is sad, she separate the team or the group, and then I say no. When you are sad, it's important to share your sadness with somebody. Not be sad alone. It's
Got
the
it.
Best healthy way to treat the sadness.
Okay. So when you're sad, do not be by yourself. Either seek out your friends, family.
And not feel embarrassed. And not feel, because I guess that is the way the human we are. So when we have a party for happy, we can have a meeting with sadness.
And going to that is, I remember many, many years ago, I had a bad breakup where I was devastated. And I didn't even know how to talk to a friend. And at that point, I sought out a therapist because I needed somebody to talk to, even if it was just to talk about it, because, you know, you're going crazy in your own mind.
Yeah.
And it's like, and by the way, we talked about this. I like would run every day, and I think in 2 weeks I lost 20 pounds. So it's like now every couple of years
I break
up.
With you again. So
again. It wasn't her. No, it wasn't. But that was, if you feel too embarrassed to seek out a friend to talk about something that's hurting you, therapy is always
the best way
very,
to share.
Always useful. We're going to talk about now our third and final subject of the day, of the three of the six emotions. We started off with happiness, we went into sadness, and now I fear we're going to talk about fear, a survival tool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh my gosh, what is that? What am I looking at? What is it? What do I do? Is it a large animal? What happens? What happens when you see like a wild fox in your backyard?
Take a picture.
We just had a fox in our backyard, and Lizette was taking video of the fox cleaning its neck with its paw, doing some other things. And while it's doing that, there are three deer like 20, 30 feet away just hanging out eating. It's like,
nobody's
in the backyard.
Yeah, nobody be fear.
No, they don't. There's no fear. They've got a jacuzzi, they've got woods, they've got trees, they can do whatever.
And the cell phone, because the cell phone interacts so much.
Hey, foxy lady. What?
Anyway, okay, so what do we have in fear?
So we're talking about fear. Fear as a survival tool. That is one of the reasons fear exists. That it's a primal emotion fundamental to human survival. It triggers a complex array of physical responses, preparing the body to react to perceived threats. Fear can be a protective mechanism. It impacts on health and well-being, especially when prolonged or intense It can be profound. So let's go back to, it's meant to move us to action now. And living in fear over a long period of time, tremendously devastating to our body chemistry and ourselves.
Yeah.
It is meant for a short period of time now. We talked about the fox, but you go outside and there is a dog from the neighborhood that you've never seen before, and it's barking and it's coming running at you, and you now are looking at this dog and you don't know, do I need to fight it off? Do I need to run from it? What do I do?
Yeah, it's and also you surprise how your body reaction. Mm. I have one experience when my child, driving the car in the garage, so I developed some skill I never know with high heel, I running to try to jump in the
So again, Lizette's how old is he now? 2 years old. He's got the car.
Yeah.
Somehow he got out of the back seat into the front seat in 2 seconds and got the car moving backwards. And Lizette goes running after the car and stops the car, however she does it.
Yeah. But the way that I running, I guess I can do, but after I stop the car, I don't feel my leg. So the leg is so much blood for running fast and jumping, after that you feel something weird in your body. Yeah. So your body is like that, you don't have energy, you feel like that you can't breathe well, and you say, wow, that feeling is terrible.
So let's go back to that. So what happens during that fear, that fight or flight instinct, is that blood moves away from where it's not needed to where it is needed. And in this case, it was Lizette's thigh muscle to allow to propel her quickly through the streets in high heels to run after the car.
An inclination like
it,
that.
it probably drained blood from her brain and her stomach and elsewhere, because you don't have time to think at that point. You only have time to act. And what you were feeling after that was the effect of the adrenaline, as well as all the oxygen that went into your blood to power your muscles. All of a sudden, it's
and also
done.
And so the other you see, it's a slow motion.
Yeah.
So it's amazing. Like you feel slow motion. You say, I'm running, but in my memory, I feel the slow motion. See the little head behind the wheel.
This is an example of fear working positively for survival.
Mm-hmm.
That it
he's
is.
He's alive.
Everything worked out okay. Yeah. It's a protective mechanism that we talked about, that if it's prolonged, it may not be good. So we talked about the fight or flight response, that the surge of adrenaline results in the rapid heartbeat, increased breathing rate, because you have more blood, more oxygen needs to get places, heightened muscle tension, so your muscle's ready to run, prepare the body for immediate action to confront or flee from the threat. That those are the positive things. Here are some more things that the body does. The pupils dilate to let in more light and widen the field of vision, so your eyes open up. Blood flow is redirected from non-essential functions like digestion to muscles, enhancing physical capabilities for a quick response. Sweating occurs to cool the body, and the skin may turn pale, the face may turn white in during fear, because of the redirection of the blood flow. The wide eyes and open mouth are common, reflecting the body's preparation for heightened sensory intake, oxygen consumption, and you may have involuntary tremors or shakes because now the adrenaline is affecting your muscles and it's something you're just not used to and you don't know how to handle. Here is the facial look. Should we do the facial look? Come on, do it. No, I don't know. But the fear is the eyes open up, the pupils dilate, your mouth opens up, and it's the blood is like sucked back into your body, into your legs, into your muscles for that quick getaway.
And so it's different level of fear, you know. You can have a little fear versus a strong fear, so like your life is in risk.
Yeah. Strong versus light. So I think we were actually making the fear face, and you didn't get to see us. Over here as we were talking, but Let's go on. The short-term physical response of fear can be life-saving in a dangerous situation, except the long-term may not be as good for you. Chronic or disproportionate fear to a threat can be detrimental to you, to your health and well-being. It can release stress hormones in the fear response, like cortisol and adrenaline, and can lead to a host of physical health problems if this continues to occur over a long period of time. Heart disease, hypertension, and weakened immune system, making the body more susceptible to illness. Chronic fear can also disrupt sleep patterns, leading to fatigue, concentration problems, and further stress. Something that we talked about is what is causing fear. Like if we're in jobs, we never had jobs 2 million years ago, right? 1 million years ago, 100,000 years ago, 10,000 years ago. There weren't that many jobs. Maybe the job was to go out and hunt and try to get an animal, right?
And it's a short period.
So short period to go fighting
with the tiger,
right?
Take out the deer and eat him, versus right now you spend 8 hours with the boss tiger.
The boss tiger walking back and forth
and
behind you.
And you have this level of stress.
You think you're going to be devoured the whole day. You're waiting for you to do something wrong. Yeah. And if that's how you feel and that's the situation you're in, you have this cortisol and these other chemicals running around your body, and they're doing not good things to you.
Yeah. And it's low level of fear, but it's constant. So
weakened immune system, the body may be more susceptible to illness. We also have the problems like disrupted sleep patterns, almost like sadness can do. Mm-hmm. You can have fatigue, concentration problems, and further stress. See what else we've got here. We also have mentally persistent fear can be damaging, lead to a problem with the quality of life. Anxiety disorder, phobias, panic attacks, in some cases, PTSD can be caused by fear.
Wow.
Excessive fear. Avoidance behaviors can come out of this. You just don't want to, like, I don't want to go to work. Or I'm going to walk through this other hallway because I don't want to see my manager. I remember one guy at work who used to come in a different door and used to, like, if you started walking this way, he'd walk the other way because he didn't want to interact with anyone. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that was. It was an avoidance behavior. And it might have been like he just didn't want to have the conversation. He didn't want to have a confrontation. It wasn't with me. It was with other people.
I had this feeling when I audit companies, nobody like to the auditor, so the people avoid, have eye contact with me. But
I do, baby. I have eye contact with you.
Okay, so what else?
So the brain, which is focused on survival, often will be at the expense of higher order thinking. So it will stop your ability to think like you should be thinking because your brain is being focused on survival. How do I survive this office environment? And you stop being able to be creative. You may not do your best work. And again, this is a cycle. Because you're fearful, you don't do your best work, which makes your manager more critical, which makes you more fearful, which makes you not be, so it's this cycle back and forth, and it gets worse and worse and worse. What else do we talk about? Avoidance. We talk about impair memory, hinder decision making capabilities, and reduce cognitive flexibility. So the opposite of happy stuff. Socially, withdrawal and avoidance. You start avoiding people, diminishing social interaction. Shared experience of fear, here we go. We talked about the positive, can be used to strengthen social bonds. People who seek comfort and assurance from others may do it together and build bonds. Emotionally, fear can be a catalyst for personal growth and resilience as you learn to overcome your fears and phobias. There you go. Overcoming fears can lead to a sense of accomplishment, improve self-esteem. And we talked about cognitive behavioral therapy as a way to overcome phobias, set your own course of what you want to do and what kind of actions. Unaddressed fears can lead to a narrowing of life experiences as individuals may avoid situations that trigger fear, phobias, not going somewhere, not traveling a certain way, not taking a train, not taking a plane, not taking an automobile because they're afraid of it. So that limits some of the life experiences.
Maybe you can confuse stressful versus fear or sadness versus fear. So when you recognize is some fear that you have for some situation, you maybe can handle and practice like the my friend say, I fear to go to in Texas, you know, the bridge,
right,
and drive her there.
Yeah.
And she said, now I take always this way because I want to reduce my fear for that. So it's when you recognize something fear, she say, my leg is shaking when I do that now. Is less checking now.
So. Yep, it just be little, and then you get through it, and you're like, oh my gosh, look what I did.
I feel better.
So much better. So today we talked about happiness, sadness, and fear, three of the universal emotions, their impact on your health and wellness. Next time we'll talk about disgust, anger, and surprise on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Thanks for listening, and have a great week.
See you next.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.